If it's Thursday, 6 p.m., that means it's time for Perspectives by John Pierce. We also have some bees buzzing around here. My guests are Reverend John Hineson and Chadwick Oxford. They are friends. I have known John Hineson for years, and I've known Chad Oxford for only maybe a year. Yeah, not so long. And they are beekeepers. So this evening's interview is on honeybees. John, let's start off by telling the folks a little bit about your background, which is quite interesting because you're a farm boy going way back.
Yes, John. I was raised near Bangor on a dairy farm. My whole family was involved in that for years. And in fact, that was how I first got introduced to honeybees.
Back when you were a child.
Well, yeah, my grandfather had honeybees, and I was frightened by them and kept my distance. At that point, it was just a passing acquaintance with them. And he used to give us honey that was in the honeycomb. He would just smash it. He did not have an extractor, so he would take the honeycomb and just smash it all up and push it into a jar and give it to us.
Okay, and I presume the bees were not around at that.
The bees were not there, that's right.
Okay. Smart grandfather.
Yeah, but it tasted good. And so that was my first introduction to bees and honey. And then years later, when I went to Penn State, my brother, 7 years younger, was in a 4-H project, which featured having a hive. So I was somewhat familiar with his exploits, a good bit of failure, which is often the case. And then after I graduated from seminary and landed in New Jersey, our house backed up to a nature preserve. And one of the summers there, I was thinking, I need a hobby. And I thought, gee, beekeeping would be pretty good right here because it's, like I say, next to a nature preserve. So I did get a hive and started my own bees. That was in 1971.
Oh, that's a while ago.
Yeah, and then moved to Kingston, New Jersey, outside of Princeton, and began keeping more bees. At that point, we did not have trouble with the varroa mites. They were not introduced yet. And so beekeeping was very different then. It was much easier.
When you move like that, do you take hives with you?
Sure, you can do that. Right. Hives are moved around quite a bit. The people who are into pollination move hives by the thousands from field to field at night. When you're sleeping, they're out there moving their hives. So I've moved hives and continued to do that as well.
And today you have how many hives?
Right now I have 13, and they are in 4 different places. I have several hives above Clark Summit near Nicholson, Pennsylvania, where my sister lived for a while. I have a couple at the church where I work part-time, Mount Bethel. 3 hives there, 1 at an orchard in Belfast, and several over in Nazareth it's a backyard.
How often do you have to visit all these hives?
It depends on the year. It depends on the season of the year. But during the honey flow from April through June, you have to keep tabs of them. You have to make sure they have enough room and watch for swarming and so forth. You also now have to treat them for the varroa mites. And if you don't treat them, they'll probably succumb to the mites. Over time, the mites will take over. Oh. And that's been a problem now for the last 10, 15 years.
Is that a problem of the Northeast U.S. particularly?
No, it's a problem almost worldwide now. These varroa mites have spread all over. But we did not have that problem when I first started. And when I first started, I would get called for swarms, many calls, because there were many feral bees. The bees would escape into the wild, and they could live in the wild, and they could live a long time in a tree and so forth. And people would call me for a swarm, and I would get them. And I was able to expand my bee numbers, my hive numbers, greatly during that time. Now, this would be in the 70s.
Why would people call you because there's a swarm?
Well, my name was on the list. available.
Does not sound good.
Beekeepers Association had a list of beekeepers who would be willing and very delighted to come and take a swarm that's in your yard.
Oh, I see. It would be in someone's yard,
yeah,
and
sure,
they'd be frightened.
Yeah, they'd be frightened. They'd want to do something about it, and we would be more than glad to come and get it. It's a whole new hive for us.
Wow.
So I was thrilled to do that. It was so exciting to go and get these bees, because you never know where they are. Sometimes they'd be 2 feet off the ground. Sometimes they'd be 20 feet off the ground in a tree, and it was a new adventure.
Okay.
But it was fun, just grabbing these colonies at night, usually, and had a new hive without paying for it. That's really how my bee yard got expanded during those years.
So this is John Heinsohn, who has just told us about his background. Now, Chadwick Oxford. Chadwick, you have not been keeping bees all that long, not as long as John.
No, I've only had them for 3 years. Amazingly, our backgrounds are similar. I actually grew up on a poultry farm. I'm quite a bit younger than John. I was born in 73, and he started his beekeeping career before I was born.
Probably 1873.
Yeah. But there's a lot of parallels. I grew up watching my grandfather keep bees. So he was, at the time, he was in North Bangor, and he was keeping royalty. Like the Heinsohn name is now, he was quite big back then. He had probably 80, 90 hives. And I used to remember going to his workshop in the winter with the wood stove going, snow outside, and he would be building bee frames with the wire and the little tiny brad nailer that he used to use. So that's a very vivid memory. And then my cousin, who's a bit older than me, he kept hives, and my uncle kept hives. So there was a lot of it going on in the family. Strangely, I never remember working the bees as a child, but they were omnipresent in our life because when I was a kid, we didn't have sugar in the house. All we had was honey because honey was free, and it came from my grandfather, and that's what we used. That's what it was
like. Oh.
So, and then there was jars of honey in, down in the basement like throughout my childhood, and my young adult, left over from my grandfather, 20-year-old honey that was still usable, that we still used. So it's always been in the background. And then when I finally slowed down in this life, like I moved back to Pennsylvania, I used to travel a lot with my other job.
What was your other job?
I used to work for GE and work on steam turbines and stuff at power plants. And previous to that, I traveled a lot with my ex-wife. She was in the medical field, so we traveled across the country. So we never really were able to put roots down. We were always coming and going. So when I finally slowed down, I thought about what are the things that I want my life to be. And I wanted bees in them again, strangely, right?
What do I want my life to be?
Yeah, I missed that. You're absolutely right.
There you go.
What do I want it to be? I wanted to have bees in it. I wanted to be part of that community, I think. I wanted to somehow identify with that, or be identified with that. Because that's somebody who, it wanted to represent my feelings on things, my culture. Like I care about my environment. I care about my orchard. I care about my bees. I care about my garden.
Tell us about your orchard.
I have a young orchard, 3-4 years old now. I have apples, peaches, plums, cherries, persimmons, all kinds of weird stuff. If it's weird, I try to get it. I have 80 feet of blackberries and then another 80 feet of raspberries and gooseberries and blueberries. And it's all still becoming.
Count them by feet.
You have to do something because they get pretty thick in there. But the bees, somebody said you want to have bees to help your pollination. But my native pollinators, I think, do a lot more pollination on my particular crops than my honeybees do. Like I see a lot more bumblebees and little sweat flies and stuff like that. My honeybees really seem to like the naturalized European, and I want to say invasive, but naturalized plants like deadhead nettle. That's when I just really noticed. They're just adapted really well to those European plants.
So honeybees came from Europe to this country?
I think that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. We brought them over when we start colonizing this country. The Indians used to call it the white man's fly. Because the bees would get there before the white settlers did. They'd always be ahead of them.
Oh.
That's what I've read.
Right.
The way that they pollinate, the way that they feed is adapted more so to the European plants that they evolved with.
I've heard that the honeybees are quite docile, that they don't go attacking people.
They can be?
Yeah. That's true. When they're out foraging for nectar and pollen, they're not interested in stinging you. They have no interest in stinging you. you can go up to them and put them on your hand and this and that. They'll just consider you a little nuisance. They'll just go around you. They won't sting you unless you try to crush them. It's only when you get near their hive or when you try to go in the hive, then they will defend their hive by stinging you. But even the most nasty bees, they're not interested in stinging you when they're out there trying to get nectar, pollen, or water. They also
concentrating
need water.
On their mission.
That's right. Well, absolutely.
And there is different temperaments of the bees. We have different breeds, and some are more known to be more protective.
These are all honeybees that you're talking about.
Yeah, there's
different breeds of
them. Yeah, there's a Caucasian, there's Italian, there's Russians.
Yeah.
And the Russians are known to be a little bit more aggressive because it's just their nature, how they evolved to protect resources. So they have a very small personal space. They don't let you close to their hives as much. They get a little bit more wound up. But bees are individuals, even though they have a hive mind. Like this year, my bees are so gentle. They are such a joy to deal with. That is a big difference for me. The last 2 years, they weren't very pleasant, and I paid a lot. I paid the price. I try to be a good beekeeper. I move slow. I'm considerate, and they do hold a grudge. I think they do, because after I'm in there and I'm out in the yard, I could be 100 yards away working in the garden, and I might still have one or two ladies harassing me. They remember my face. I swear they do.
Oh, wow.
You can't convince me otherwise. My dad will be right next to me, and they won't mess with him. They're just me.
Yeah. Now, you said something, used a word just now, which is interesting. Some ladies were around.
Yes.
What are the men doing all this time?
Well, they do what men do.
Do they stay in the hive all the time?
Yeah, most of the time.
Most of the time, they go out. They raise them to help carry on the genetics. So the only job of the males is to raise up, and then go mate with a neighboring queen. So they raise up, and then they patrol a certain area at a certain level, waiting for a queen. That's their whole job. They mate, and then they die, and then the fall they get kicked out.
I guess they're attracted by the hormones that the virgin queen gives off.
Okay.
And she will be impregnated by up to a dozen or so drones before she goes back to her hive and then stays in her hive.
So she leaves the hive.
That's right.
Yeah, one time in her life, maybe twice if she swarms, but...
Once or twice in her life.
Generally once. Once she's hatched, she leaves the hive and is impregnated and then returns and continues to lay eggs. Hundreds, thousands of eggs a day, just constantly laying eggs all the time.
Every day.
It's her mission.
Yeah, her mission.
How long does the queen live?
She can live several years. Many beekeepers replace their queens after 2 years or so, but I think she could live 3 or 4 years.
From the reading I've done, it used to be 9 years wasn't unheard of. But now, like, I'll never experience that in my lifetime as a younger beekeeper. Like, 2 years, if you have 2 years, you did well.
Part of that is because of the toxic environments that the chemicals that they work, that we tend to work with, or the farmers work with, or whatever.
Yeah,
it comes back to the hive, and the queens are eventually affected by that.
I think it's considered like a death of a million cuts. There's a lot of little stressors that they have now that they didn't used to have. Even though we try to medicate them and help them when we can, there's just a lot of stresses on them. So 2 years, you did pretty well.
My guests this evening on Perspectives are John Hindson and Chadwick Oxford. They are beekeepers extraordinaire, as they call themselves. We're ready to take a break now, so buzz on off and do what you need to do, but come right on back. This is John Pierce, Perspectives on WDIY.
Hi, this is Steve Inskeep with NPR News, inviting you to join me for Morning Edition on WDIY. Morning Edition takes listeners across this country and around the world with stories that inform and challenge and entertain, alongside the day's weather, traffic, and local news headlines. Listen to Morning Edition weekdays beginning at 5 a.m. right here on WDIY 88.1, your trusted Lehigh Valley NPR member station since 1995.
And we're back talking about honeybees. Now, John and Chadwick, my guests here this evening, I bet the two of you, if you closed your eyes and there was some buzzing around your head, you would not know the difference among honeybee, yellow jacket, wasp, what else,
Hornets.
John? Hornets.
Yeah, I would know the difference with the hornet.
Okay.
Because I have problems with hornets.
Uh-oh.
The European hornets. They ate a lot of bees last year, which I didn't know that's something they did. So I learned something last year. They would come in and just grab a whole little bee, just carry it off. Oh. And I had quite a few. But I could hear, when I was working the bees, I would hear a low buzz coming in. And they would pick up a bee in the midair, fly away.
Whoa.
So that one I can tell the difference.
That's the hornet.
Yeah.
But the others, you really can't tell the difference, huh? In the buzzing?
Hearing them. No, I'm not sure.
No, I never really listened. The hornet, I paid attention. That was a little disturbing to me.
If you see them, a beekeeper should be able to tell right away.
Right,
yeah.
What's a honeybee and what's a yellow jacket.
Let's suppose that some of our listeners out there would like to get into this business of beekeeping. Mm-hmm. What kind of equipment would be, what's the monetary outlay that they would need to get started?
I would recommend that you go slow and not spend a lot of money with all the equipment you could buy, because it could be quite costly. And unfortunately, many of the beekeepers who start are not adequately prepared or not sure what to expect. And either they lose their bees or they lose their excitement after a couple of years, and all that money is perhaps wasted. So I would suggest if you're really interested in keeping bees, first of all, find out as much as you can about beekeeping. There are bee associations. We have one in the Lehigh Valley. It's called Lehigh Valley Beekeepers Association, which is very good. And they offer courses every year in beekeeping, starting about, I think it's in February. And that is an excellent way to become familiar with what's involved in beekeeping. And they're taught by people who really know what they're doing.
So they have classes.
They have classes, yep. And they will tell you what you need to buy and so forth. So what you really need is some kind of protection. I generally just use a veil and a helmet and tied around the waist. Gloves are somewhat optional. Most new beekeepers will probably want gloves, but...
You want gloves.
You want gloves.
One sting's too many. It's going to happen anyway.
If you have nasty bees, you probably will use gloves.
Yeah.
But the essentials would be a smoker. You absolutely need a smoker anytime you look at bees, because that disarms them and enables you to get in the hive without just getting attacked.
Right. Why do you want to get into the hive?
If you want to look at the hive, and you need to look at bees to check them.
Yeah, we need to inspect them, make sure they're healthy.
Yeah, anytime you work with bees.
Doing what they're doing.
Smoke has this very mysterious effect on the bees, and there are various theories about what it does. But the bottom line is it disarms the guards and so forth, and the bees load up on honey, and they're calm, and you can get in there and without getting stung up.
Right.
Yeah, so a smoker is very important. That's essential.
I think some of it impairs their ability to smell each other's pheromones. If they're putting off a warning pheromone or attack pheromone, it confuses their communication. So they're just, like you said, gorge on honey because they think maybe there's a fire, you know, confuses them, but puts them at ease.
And the honey is the food that the bees eat during the wintertime.
That's
right.
Right. Right. Right.
It's their most valuable resource next to the queen. The queen is their most valuable resource. And then comes their honey. Their numbers are important too.
So in addition to the smoker, you need a hive tool to manipulate the frames and so forth. And that's basically what you need. Now with the bees, you need a package. You need to order a package of bees or get a nuke, what we call a nuke, which is half a hive, deep half, to get started. And this year I think a package of bees, which is 3 pounds of bees plus a queen and a little jar of syrup, usually coming from Georgia, cost about $150, I think it was, close to. And so that's what you would need to start.
You mentioned syrup. What's that for?
That's to keep them alive in transit, because they come in a cage. They come in a little bit of a screen cage, and they could be in there for several days, so they need to be kept alive. And they feed each other, so they're in that little cage and called a package of bees.
Yeah.
And we used to be able to get them through the mail.
Yeah.
When I first started, I could order them through the U.S. Postal Service, but they don't do that anymore.
How about ordering them online nowadays?
It still has to come through the Postal Service.
Yeah, Now you have beekeepers who go down to Georgia and they'll take orders and they'll bring 500 packages back or something like that.
Oh.
That's generally the way we get them now. But that's how you'd probably start with a low end. Yeah.
Just to add to what he said, when I started, again, I got a book from the library. So I knew what was going on. And then I was in Florida at the time, and I took a course with a university that was down there, like an ag university. Went on the weekends, and we did some bee inspections, so I kind of knew what I was getting into. And then when I moved back to Pennsylvania, I asked around who might have bees, like, where do you buy honey? And then I went, it was actually John's brother, Eric. I just went and knocked on his door. I got my little courage up, knocked on the door, said, hey, I want to get bees. Will you help me? Will you help mentor me? He said, yeah, absolutely. And that has been one of the most wonderful things about the beekeeping community. People who know or think they know want to share. And it's such a wonderful thing. I've yet to have somebody like turn me down when I wanted to know something.
Yeah.
That they hard earned through like mistakes and trial and error, but they were willing to give it to me freely.
Great. And you, Chadwick, I haven't asked you, how many hives do you have at this point?
I fluctuate. I was up to 19 last year, and I flew a little bit too close to the sun, and I couldn't get them all through the winter. They weren't big enough. They weren't strong enough. And I came through spring with 2. I lost 17 over the winter.
Oh, wow.
It doesn't mean I'm a bad bee parent. It just means they just couldn't – I didn't give them the tools that they needed, or they weren't able to help themselves through. They had plenty of food. They just didn't have the numbers to keep everybody warm, I think. But I came through the spring with 2, and they swarmed on me. That means the initial queen left, but they made their own queen, which it sets me back a little. But I'm not in it for the honey. I'm just in it for the experience. The honey is extra to give away. I've been in it 3 years. I've yet to keep any honey. I took one frame for a friend of mine for his birthday. I gave him a full frame of honey because he eats it off with a spoon. But other than that, I've been just trying to make bees. So I found that you can either make bees or you can make honey. So I've been trying to make bees. So I'm up to 7 hives now. 7 very nice, healthy hives. And I'll have to take honey off because it's getting to be too much for them. They're very good at storing it. Now I get to take a little bit of honey, but I make bees mostly. I bought one package from John's brother. Actually, no, it was a nuke. It was a nucleus hive. And from that, I've been able to continue on.
Yeah, I assume that beekeepers were always in it for the honey. But Chadwick, you said
I'm not judging people to do it as a business.
Experience.
Well, experience, and it's for the community. It's for the orchard. It's for the memories, maybe. It's for the legacy that's in my family.
Being like, outdoors, it's consorting with nature.
You build your own equipment, and then like I had my nieces help me paint some of it, and they put like little butterflies. Yeah. That was cool. And then every morning I open up the curtain and I look out to the bee yard. That's my thing. I look out the bee yard, look over the garden, make sure the bear didn't get into it, make sure the fence is still up. So it's become a big part of my life.
Yeah.
It hasn't taken it over, but it's... It makes a lot of joy for me.
Yes. Now, if we were to go up to the Community Presbyterian Church in Mount Bethel and look around a little bit, we would find out that Reverend John is in it for the honey, right?
Yeah.
So these jars, what are they, 12 ounces?
They're pound jars.
Pound jars.
The church is selling. I've donated the honey to the church, and they're selling it. Like a small fundraiser.
And how for a pound jar, how long would it take to produce that?
That's a hard question to answer. I've already taken off and extracted about 500 pounds this year from these different hives, and I have 13 hives. But there'll be more honey to come off before the fall. I would expect this year I'll probably harvest about 800 pounds of honey.
Oh my goodness! And so that would be 8 jars.
Yes, but I put the honey in pails as I store it, and then because raw honey will crystallize and it has to be heated up when you sell it for people, so they know it's honey.
We should touch on the shelf life of honey and also the benefits of the raw honey versus the stuff that doesn't crystallize.
Yes, and a number of folks are interested in local honey because of allergies and so forth, and. So you're going to pay more, but you can go to a store. Any of the stores will have honey at half the cost of what we will be charging. That mostly is imported from, I think you were telling us earlier, a lot of it's from Nigeria, but other countries as well, China, et cetera. In any case, the honey that is on the store shelves usually has had the pollen taken out of it, and it has to be at a certain moisture level so it doesn't crystallize. And we do not remove the pollen, at least not much, because that's part of the reason that you can take local honey and build up your resistance to allergens in the air. That's part of the of the understanding.
Yeah. Slow exposure to the pollen that maybe gives.
Chadwick, you mentioned something about ancient Egyptians.
They recovered honey from the tombs in Egypt, and they actually were able to eat it. So we're talking thousands of years. So it's the only food that I'm aware of, and pretty sure I'm correct on this, that doesn't go bad. As long as it's stored correctly, you keep the moisture out of it, and say ants really love it. So if you keep it sealed and you keep the moisture out, it is stable for, they don't think there's an end point.
So is it true, I've never noticed this, there's no expiration date ever on a honey jar?
FDA puts like an expiration date on water. So, you got to understand the food regulations. But like I had honey, no kidding, that was 25 years old from my grandfather in a gallon jug, just had a piece of wax paper over it and a lid on it. And we were able to, it was crystallized. And then we were able to heat it very gently in water, just the whole jar, and it uncrystallizes. So honey doesn't, if you ever have honey and it crystallizes, gets cloudy in the jar, it didn't go bad. It just, that's how the molecules rearrange and start crystallizing. So you gently heat it. And it'll go back to liquid state. Or you can do like what I do is you put it in like a hot building or a hot car this summer, just sit it in there on the floor and it'll go back to where it's supposed to. But if it's overheated, it'll never crystallize. So a lot of the honey that you get, say at Walmart or IGA, you'll see it and it's never going to crystallize because people don't understand you actually, that's proof of its quality if it does crystallize. It means it hasn't been overprocessed, overheated. You haven't destroyed the enzymes that are necessary.
Okay.
That you're trying to get.
Now, we talked about the life of the queen bee, and you said 2, 3, 4 years could be. What about the lifetime of the females that go out and collect the nectar?
Okay, that varies a good bit. Obviously, they have to last long enough to last most of the winter. So when they're not active, from November through April, many of those bees will last 4 or 5 months. But during the summer, when it's very active, like now, these female bees, because they're so active, only last about a month before they simply wear out.
Their little wings will actually wear out.
Yeah. Oh, because they're just constantly going from flower to flower.
Yes.
And that's their task. That's what they do.
Each one of them produces perhaps 1/12 of a tablespoon.
It's a very small amount, but it's the numbers. When you have, as we do, these big hives, we have 50 to as much as 100,000 bees in a big colony. Now, that's not all colonies, but you figure that many bees working constantly, you accomplish a lot.
To think of it as teamwork makes the dream work, because the more bees, stuff gets done.
Believe it or not, guys, it's time for us to say sayonara.
Okay. No.
Thank you so much for coming over to our WDIY microphones. Our engineer this evening is James Zebroat. And James, we have learned a whole lot about honeybees, haven't we? He's nodding. Reverend John Hindson and Chadwick Oxford, my guests this evening on Perspectives. I'm John Pierce, your host. Stay tuned now for more. Until we meet again, remember to be gentle with your neighbor.